Welcome, listeners. As I drive down this dark, diverse highway and pause to pick up John Aitken and Bob Fleming from Prog to Who, trek this out and take your seats. We are on a journey of discovery into the imagery and mastery of Lynchian landscapes, the efflux of stories interwoven in a tapestry of films. This is The Lynch Mob. And welcome to another Lynch Mob. This is the one I've been really waiting for. This, I've been waiting to hear what Bob says. It's Eraserhead from 1977.
Hello, I'm Henry. The reaction, Eraserhead is Eraserhead, you know, and it was meant to be just that way. And however people react to it is fine. And the next film I make, I'd like to think more about an audience and, you know, what they're going to be reacting to and like that. But it wasn't that I just went about it haphazardly. Eraserhead was a real definite, you know, thing in my head, but I didn't think about how people were going to react to it.
I can't tell you how happy I am that we've left this to last. And I'll tell you why. There's a couple of reasons. If I'd have watched this first, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But the fact we've watched it at the end and we've seen all the Lynch films, so I've seen and Twin Peaks and all that, all the Lynchisms, and gone back to his very first film, I find it, although it's quite a dark theme, I find it so pure with a bit of, not naive, but pure Lynch before he got affected by Hollywood. And I've seen him, all the things that hot towards Hollywood and all and to TV and all, like, all the horrible things that he doesn't like. This is just him making a film about something that's very, now I don't, the Hollywood thing's personal to him, but there's a bigger picture, whereas this is just how he felt, apparently, when he found out he was having a baby. And I got a lot of association for that to a degree. Now, no, I wanted a baby, and I'm very happy about it all and all that. But I can see that route that people would go down to this despair, and it's so brilliantly portrayed in a pure Lynch way. And I've now found my favourite Lynch film. This is number one, absolutely fucking beautiful. Love it.
I did not expect that.
It is totally
it's fucking amazing.
It's artistic.
To me, that's why I'm pleased watched it last, because I wouldn't be thinking that. It's taken all of the stuff to watch this last to make that happen to me, and I was just like, and I've only watched it once, so normally my Lynch is like meh, and watch it again, I'm like, wow, oh my god, fucking loved it, man. Absolutely, this is a piece of art. It's just, oh man, it's incredible.
And the interesting thing is that you can see the genesis of all the stuff that he put into all his other stuff.
Yeah.
In this,
yeah,
and you can that makes it, like you say, making this the last one,
oh,
makes
mate.
It all the more special. I think
I can't tell you how happy I am. This is the last one after I've got armed myself with all this other stuff. Jesus Christ! But he was like, he was already there, wasn't he? His mind was already there. His brain, how it
even
works.
At such a young age.
Oh,
such a young age.
Fucking hell.
And you could. This was definitely the foundation for the house of films he built. This was it.
Yeah,
there's so 100%. Many, like John was saying, it seeps through to all his films.
He's
the
working
dreamlight, the abstract, the surreal, even the lighting, the effecting, the
sound,
staging,
sound.
The theatre.
The sound.
The sound is incredible in this one.
Oh, like, man, this is
next
this is,
level.
Yeah, oh, fucking hell. Honestly, I mean, it could have easily, I mean, I don't, like I say, if I just watched it without being armed with the Lynch stuff, that'd be a different story, but to have that and just to hear the how he works, how he gets you fucking tense and feeling dirty, and it's horrible, and it's, oh, fucking hell, man. And then just the what the fuck, because quite a lot of this, to a degree, apart from the end, isn't what the fuck. You kind of get it. It's kind of makes sense. Although it is a dream, like, his dream or nightmare or whatever it is, until the sort of last 20 minutes when it gets a bit crazy. It's kind of just making sense as a film, isn't it?
It does make sense. I've I've watched it so many times, this, and I've been waiting. I held myself back until we watched all the wealth of other films. Of which
did you think
of
about baseball and stuff, did you, Clem?
Yeah.
Baseball and tits and that.
That's me. Well, I when I first watched this was years ago, I must be about 16, and then, like I said, I watched Blue Velvet, and those were my two. Like, I had this forever, and I've watched it on magic mushrooms and all sorts.
Yeah.
And he tried to interpret it in so many different ways. And obviously, they got the very strong stance of his connection to his first child, who was born at the time. But even he said in interviews, that's only a sliver of what's in it.
Yeah.
And he still won't tell you what it's about. So I have hit this so many times in the road, and I've come up with so many different interpretations and a new one for this podcast. Honest to God, I watched it again, and I've watched it twice since John says he's watched it, and we watched Lost Highway. And I've had a new brainwave of what it could be as well.
Go on, then.
So I'll tell you about it. Right, my new thing of this is the significance of the man and the levers. Yeah,
it's junction. I was thinking exactly that, because it bookends it,
Yeah, and it bookends it. And what we've seen in Lynch is he always tells you what he wants at the beginning, and the answers go through, and you can get confused, but at the end is a reflection of the beginning. Now, he pulls three levers at the beginning. He pulls two and then another one, yeah? And these levers I find significant because it's birth, life and death.
Yeah.
And I think because the film is made in such a bizarre fashion, and because everything around him is decaying and death, even the flowers in her street, she goes to the flower he tries to keep, or tree he tries to keep in his room, he's got no roots, he's got no connection. It's just off-the-cuff bizarre, of which when you watch Mulholland Drive, you watch Inland Empire, there's always this dream world. Well, this was the entire dream world.
Yeah.
And it made me think, is this his limbo? As he committed this crime before, and he's trapped, and therefore this is his journey in his head to get from point A, committing suicide after killing his baby, until the end when he finally realized what he's done and he's taken control of him, to then move off to the next, like, heavenly place or whatever. Because the only clue I've got was, I watched a few interviews like we all do, and he says this is his most spiritual film. And then I kept thinking it's spiritual, and I understand what he was going through at the time. He started meditation. I was thinking, could it be that? Could it be a lot in limbo of which this guy is journeying? What do you think of that theory?
I think it's bullshit.
No, it makes
a lot of sense. But the issue is, again, of course, that there are multiple ways of interpreting this film.
And that's what's beautiful about it, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is what's beautiful. And even Lynch, if he was here, he'd probably sit and just listen to us, because he'd be so chuffed that there's so many different interpretations of it.
I'll call him mine.
He wouldn't enjoy listening to us.
No, that's true. First, I need a translator.
And he'd be like, when he hears the word Cobra Kai, he'd be like, that guy, Bob Fleming, he's got a lot of taste. He knows a lot about film and television. I'll tell you what I do love.
I'll point him towards the Inland Empire review then, shall we, Bob?
Yeah, you do that. Get some fucking decent cameras, mate. I'll stand by that forever.
He had a good camera for this, didn't he?
Yeah, he had some good cameras, and I got a good restoration copy on Blu-ray, new release.
I'm surprised you didn't mention couldn't afford to pay for colour film.
No, I can do black and white, John. Do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of 60s Doctor Who. And I mean that even down to the soundscape, the sort of length of shot, you know, like, just obviously quite minimal stuff going on and all that. But it was, it reminded me loads of Doctor Who, you know, that sort of like the sound in the background, the quite high in the mix with a lot of space in the picture. It reminded me, a tiny bit of 60s Doctor Who. And just, it felt like, a bit like Elephant Man, you were watching like a proper old film, awesome old film. And I love the way it just gives it time to breathe and all that. And you know, the bit at the beginning where there's the planet behind him with, you know, like you were saying before about the gatekeeper guy, and I love that idea that he's letting... I didn't really think of the birth, life, you know, death thing, and that's perfect with the three levers. But I love the fact he's sort of on the side, and it's this planet, and I sort of saw the planet as being, you know, the where this dream takes place, be it in what sort of thought realm. I never thought I'd say that, but you know, like, and then yeah. But I love the idea with the levers. Like, this is, and also I think that the baby and him are the same person in the dream as well, to a degree. And yeah, I fucking love the sort of just the base level of it, of someone with this mundane life, you know, having to go and see the parents, having to go through an unexpected pregnancy with not much money, you know, all that stuff that people can associate a lot with that. And I think that's why it's brilliant. And it, and again, it's coming back to people, what goes on in people's heads. So, like, you know, people have warpy thoughts. They fucking do, you know. And this is sometimes places go to where, you know, your conclusion's incorrect, or a place of despair. And I love the fact he can really tap into that as well. And I think when he was saying about this, when he got into his meditation and stuff like that, or getting into that, you can kind of see that, yeah, maybe he is, you know, he's coming to a balance, so he's okay with put it on screen, make some sort of sense to it using art, you know, trying to get that balance from where his brain was at previously. Because that's a big reason why people get into meditation, is to bring about that balance from having, you know, quite a negatively active brain, if you see what I mean. But there is this normality to it, this mundane, and I love it. And the casting in this is fucking perfect as well. And it's kind of feeling normal, to a degree, you know, for Lynch. And then suddenly you've got, like, that scene with the family, you know, when he goes to the family and she just starts doing, like, some weird... and then brushing the daughter's hair, the daughter starts crying. But that's awesome, because she's, like, trying to make her baby feel better, you know, and it's, like, it's intense, horrible scene. Then the father comes through. And when the father comes through, the sound of the trains and the pipes and all that kind of stuff is going on, getting louder and louder, the dog's barking, the more angry he gets. And it's just, again, the soundscape and the fucking tension of it. Oh, my God. It's just brilliant.
I think a lot of the imagery, as you say, is right there. I think that family thing, for instance, I think it's an awkward thing. That entire meeting with that family would have been awkward for the reasons, for him just being who he is and the situation, and meeting new people is weird, and all of the stuff that happens in that house is a reflection of somebody who's uncomfortable as fuck being there.
Yeah.
So everything else is maxed up. The wife, the mother,
the noise,
the father's way of acting. Yeah. Ramped up. But I think that's definitely based on the situation that you've been in.
I also think that in that house, you've got everything complete. You've got life and birth and possible death of the old woman, because she's nearly dead. You've got the puppies of being babies, and you've got the mad cat, what's happening of life itself. So within that, you've got a full circle there, and then it completes when they say, oh, you know, she's pregnant.
There's also
so much going in that scene.
The birth, death and life theme, which, again, coming back to Levin, there's a bit where he says, when she asks him what he does, and he says he's on vacation. I didn't really think about much about that at the time, but thinking about it, it sounds to me like he's saying, I'm on vacation, like I'm checking out. You know, that's him. He knows that he maybe can't, you know, he's just vacating any sort of life that he thought he might have. I don't know. Just sort of thought about that then when you were on about stuff.
I mean, you could be right. But my thought as well, I just want to go back to the what were we going to call him? The switch fella.
Gatekeeper.
The gatekeeper. But you
it's
start
like a
off,
junction of a train.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say. It starts off with, like, that planetoid. And there's something about him lying, his head being sideways on the screen, that is like Major Briggs it happened to in season 3 of Twin Peaks.
Oh, yeah.
That's got to be something about imagination or dreaming or something. And I'm thinking that he sees that as his whole world. When he digs into it, and then you're transitioned literally, both narratively and with a bloody switch, into whether that's his regrets animated into an entire thing, or whether it's just a dream, or it's this final, it's his life flashing before his eyes moment. That's why.
Yeah.
As he lays dying, the regrets of everything that he'd done, and just his life flashing before his eyes. And so when it ends and he dies, the switch has gone back, and at the end of that presentation, if you like. I do think that the switch guy is something akin to a projector, somebody who runs a projector in a cinema.
No, that's a good point, yeah.
You know, playing a movie.
Yeah, because he's watching through the window, which is watching through the window in the projector. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So, I mean, that's what I think. I think that's the symbolism of that is something that big with Lynch. He's very cinema and the sort of ideas on the screen thing is something he's very big with. And loads of sperms.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was going to come to the sperms.
But it did.
So obviously, at the beginning, you've got it going off into the hull or whatever it is, and I love that. But I love the fact she keeps this little, well, not seed, is it? A little, what appears to be a little sperm trapped in this box and doesn't tell.
His libido. Yeah, his sexuality. Libido.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got that.
Because
yeah.
It doesn't come out, does he, until he has that lustful moment with the naughty lady. And again, I love that. And I love the fact that he can't get away from this baby, this monstrous baby. And the fact that when she sees what's going on, that's all she sees in him. So he's lost that lust and he feels guilty about that lust, but he's lost it. He's got no... nowhere to go with it because that's ended, stopped.
And I do think that sex scene is the most amazing sex scene
it's
I've ever
cool,
seen.
Yeah.
The visualization of just losing yourself inside it and submerging yourself in that moment, and yeah, it's very literal and well metaphorical as well.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
It's so cleverly shot for such a what was it? Took 5-6 years to make. It's a budget of around 10,000. And these are first amateur, you know, university people, friends. He got together to make it. And if you think about the special effects he used within it, it's astounding. And if you look at it as well, it still stands up really, really well.
Yeah, like decently done practical effects, yeah.
Exactly. And it could be watched now. I'm sure it is watched by university media studies or whatever. And it could have been made a few years ago, easily. The only connection with the past you see is Lynch's perfect involvement of his own self, which is very 1950s furniture and the way people dress, which, as we've seen connected all the way through, he seems to always have that harking back to his bygone days.
I mean, the character's hairstyle.
Yeah.
Wearing a suit all the time.
Lynch dresses like that a lot, doesn't he? With the black and black style. Yeah, he's got that style, and the style is what he's put on to Henry Spencer.
Yeah,
you know that's. I mean, I don't know, but I think this is. Do you know what? Actually, someone mentioned Twin Peaks before. Now, the nearest thing he's ever come again to this for me is the episode 8 of season 3. The famous, amazing episode 8 of season 3. This is basically his new Eraserhead with a budget and stuff. And that's really what I saw. I saw loads of that. And that's what, again,
I see many parallels in it, but I also think that series 8 is his ode to transcendental meditation as well.
Yeah.
And I don't think that this was particularly an ode to transcendental. I think this is very internalised. This is very spiritual, as you say, for him.
Yeah.
It's about his life, I think.
I think, I mean, the visuals, the sound, the slight surrealness.
Oh, the way it's formulated. Yeah,
And it's paced as well. The film's really, really
got a great
well
pace.
It's like the amount of times I've watched it, I just don't get bored. And I could watch a film and I'd be like, oh, I'll just go and get a cup of tea. And I never want to move with this film.
Yeah.
I have to pause it and then go and grab something and bring it back. It's a film which... there's so much on visually that you don't want to miss anything. And you're sort of worried, have I missed something? Anything from the numbers of where Mary lives is the same number of his house where he grew up. The houses, I mean, the pipes. And he,
what,
and he
2416?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
got number 26.
Yeah, where Henry lived.
But there's loads of little things in there where he punches in for himself, and his massive use for pipes and industrial works. I'm not sure of where he grew up. Maybe it had a massive industrial works near there.
Didn't he? He had. He lived in sort of rural Indiana for a while, and then he ended up in Philadelphia, which he says
which
that he
be
it was his formative time. Which is your massive industrialized city, but.
Go
for it.
I was going to say, the next film after this, you can see him transitioning from Eraserhead to Elephant Man, and the uses of what he picked up from Eraserhead, the industrial side, the soundscape and the pipes, and the way it's even shot as well. It's a perfect piece of art, but not over the top pretentious, of which you could have found in a lot.
Well, there's a narrow boundary between pretentious surrealism for the sake of it, and then stuff that I think, in all cases, he doesn't do anything that's not been thoroughly thought through. That tree that they're looking at, or whatever particular item or situation that he puts in, has been thought out and it's been worked out. Like the radiator, for instance. The source of warmth, the source of heat.
And also,
there's a scene where he's looking at the radiator and there's a light kind of behind it, casting through the bars. Which is exactly the same as, like, I think it might be, might not be episode 8. It might be episode 8, actually, of Twin Peaks, where there's, like, lots of moments where there's a light shining through a screen that has slots in it, which is his idea of, and I'm getting this from that four-hour fucking video for Twin Peaks, but it's the backlighting of a screen.
Yeah,
it's a cinema. It's what and it's like throwing. It's like treating the bars as a film with a light show, and it's like projecting it onto the viewer.
Do you know what
I think he uses all that sort of stuff all the way through. He used it in many, many other things that he's done
with the radiator and the radiator lady. I saw that as like because she was kind of like pure reassuring, the warmth of the radiator, the niceness, and all that kind of thing. I saw it as the welcoming of death. Rather than, you know,
yeah.
I don't know. That's what I quite. That's what I quite liked.
That's what I thought. Yeah. But I'm not 100% sure about that. It might also. She just might be an angelic being. She might be God.
Someone
in his passing over of what he envisions as something pure and sweet and innocent.
She's the light at the end of the tunnel. She's the light at the end of the tunnel. Maybe that's why he embraces her at the end.
I like that.
Well, I think it's interesting that, like, and I think she's amazing that whoever the woman that did that was the woman in the radiator. But that's all she's done in terms of acting.
Wow!
Just this, which is the weirdest thing ever.
I love it. I love the fact that Jack Vance. This is his first film with him, and he continues to be in everything. Everything. He's been everything, Jack Vance, hasn't he, that Lynch's ever done?
I think that's what how Lynch works, though, haven't we? And we've seen that through all his stuff. If he's got a close knit of people who's sort of just on the same wavelength or understands his vision, he keeps them. And he keeps them quite close.
Apparently he was very meticulous, Jack Vance. That's why they sort of got on really well.
Perfect for Lynch.
Yeah, every movement. You know, when he's on the couch, when he's talking to the parents, he's got this sort of like nervous twitch with his hand. All this stuff was thought about, that the length of time he spent moving his body, everything like that. That's what he was doing. And just to go back to when you were saying before about the pacing and the length, which is tremendous. He actually showed his first cut of it to people, and the reaction was extremely bored. So he went back and recut the whole film, apparently, because of the sort of poor pacing of it. Because obviously he's new, wasn't he? And he put together what he thought, and I think it was quite a bit longer, and it just lost people's interest and were kind of walking out. So that's when he went back and he edited it the way he did, perfect.
There was another 20 minutes, and there was a torture scene which the log lady was in. So log lady Charlotte, I can't remember her full name, sorry about that, but she was in that scene, and she was helping a lot behind the scenes, doing a lot of the lighting work and helping, and he remembered her all the way through the years and got her back to do the Twin Peaks as a very good friend. Well, she was married to Jack as well at the time, but within that period of time of 5 years, you'd had love, life, death, you've had struggles, you've had hardship, and I think the film would be completely different if he would have done it within a short time of 6 months or 3 months, like normality of a film. It's because he had so much touch in his own life, he continuously added it into the film as he went on.
What was it, the filming that took long, or just the project? Do you see what I mean? Like the
writing. Both?
No, but I mean, so like getting it off the ground, writing, that kind of thing. The filming block, if you like, was that. That can't have been 5 years of filming.
I think it was a massive gap in between when he did half the film and then did another half.
It's went to become raising funds a lot of it. And he's such a artist, isn't he? And he's not going to go half measured. If he's got a vision, he'd rather construct an entire set, of which he has done, rather construct things to what he wants. And if it's going to take months and months, he'll get it right. Mm. And I think that's the difference. Like, if he was being pressurized by, an alternative person who was putting up the funds for it, or pressurized from a film company to put it out, then he'd be rushing the film. But he didn't need to rush it. He had his own time. This is a vision, what he had. It was a burn. You know what I mean? Everyone's got that book in them, what they need to write. I think this was this perfect moment.
It was, for me.
Likewise, I don't think, in reality, this is why I think this is a fantasy as well, is because I don't think in reality he kills the baby. I think in his fantasy he kills the baby.
Yeah. The dream, the
fantasy. He wanted it gone. He's not happy.
I know that my new theory is him trapped in limbo due to a suicide, or killing a baby and suicide, or something like that. But I just see it like someone stuck in that dreamscape world right from the beginning to the end.
It's expertly done paranoia and hopelessness and despair.
Yeah.
All of the things. I mean, Lynch does that perfectly. The sound, the way Jack Nance sort of acts it, the whole situation.
Jack Nance is the best performance he's been in.
And those scenes in his little bed sit with him and his wife and the baby, absolute agony and despair of, like, he can't change anything.
And there's so much in there of which that I've written tons down, even though it's about a millionth time I've watched it.
Yeah,
so I've written tons down. But one of the things I picked up again this time, which I didn't see, you kick yourself when you see it. There's a brilliant bit where Mary goes off and she's like, right, I'm leaving you, blah, 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 I'm going to go. And she struggles getting her bag from under his bed. And she looks through the bars of the bed. He's fucking used that. It's Bob in Twin Peaks. Oh, he looks through the bars of the bed. And I was like, fucking hell, he's used the same shot. And not only that, he's slamming. She's trying to get it. And she's in pain trying to get it. Like her suffering the set.
And she can't escape.
She had. Yeah. And she can't escape, yeah. And I was like watching it. I was like kicking myself when his little boy points in it where he's used again and used again. The famous twig scene, like you've got in the background now, Bob. The twig
Twin Peaks.
Used again, Twin Peaks. Yeah. The flooring,
the theatre, the curtains, the stage.
Mulholland Drive and everything he does.
It's all there and it's all brilliant.
It's the theatre in, just a little aside here, the theatre in both Twin Peaks and Mulholland Drive has been sold, and it's now an Apple store.
No way.
I think.
That's a bit devastating, isn't it? That's a bit gutting.
It is a little bit.
The end. The end, lads. I want to go through this sort of last 20 minutes with you, because that's when, having only watched it once, I kind of didn't have a chance to get a theory on it, and that's when the sort of more complex, more surreal elements enter. So I'd be interested to know your thoughts on like the ending, really.
In specific,
well, just like what's your theory? Because it's quite, this pencil factory, their heads, being chopped off. Is it?
Well, the whole eraser.
Is it erasing your memory? Is it a place where that happens?
I've been trying to work that out, and I honestly don't know. But if I had to suggest anything, it's that all a person's life is just comes down to whether you're going to be the pencil or the eraser end of a pencil. The eraser end doesn't add anything to anything. It removes, so it's deleting. It doesn't anything. The pencil you can create, write, and do all sorts.
You can't
write or do anything with the rubber with the eraser at the end.
Yeah,
and so His life is all been a waste of time and he's amounted to absolutely nothing.
Oh, I like that, John. That's a good one.
That's the only thing that's kind of come to me recently.
I like that.
I saw that as well, and also the fact that if you are the eraser, you can delete parts of your life. You can delete what has been written. You can delete what you've been done. And that's one of the things he's trying to do, is to delete this. But it's also a selfish blame of which he's got, and I can't think of the words, so John probably knows the proper word for it, but he's struggling with the fact that he's blaming everything on the baby, on his life,
guilt.
And Mary, when really his life was no other better beforehand.
No. Yeah. And that's the thing, isn't it? The guilt that it carries on. And then he's kind of like on trial as well at this point.
It's a self-trial. I think we all do that when we do things what we can't.
Absolutely. And I think he can't escape the baby, and that's why this head comes out. And that's why my sort of thought comes back that he's the baby as well as, you know, what he is in this.
Well, for me, that baby's taken over him, his life. It's taken over everything.
Yeah. I like that.
In that suit, he just grows to fill the suit that he is.
That bit was like fucking cool, though, when his head just fucking drops off, the baby head came out, and it just pool of blood, it disappeared into that pool of blood. He's completely immersed, taken over by this baby and what he's done.
And then some kid runs up and turns it into a rubber.
It takes it to the rubber factory. Fucking awesome. Absolutely
but
awesome,
every
man.
Single part of that is edited perfect. Yeah. Like we had to tell people who've never seen it, it's his first film, and the editing is completely sound. It's amazing. The way it goes from one to the other perfectly. Like the lad grabs the head, goes to the pencil factory. And I love that, like...
the gangster guy. I love the
characters. Are amazing.
Yeah. The gangster guy that comes to the door, the big gangster suit, takes the head, and it's quite...
Just shouts at the guy on the buzzer. That's all he does in his entire role.
Calm down. Yeah, and then he just takes it, and he's watching on while the eraser heads are being made for the pencils, and it's quite, like, engrossing. You know, the fact that, I want to see how pencils are made. Obviously, that's how pencils are made. I don't mean the brain bit, but the machinery
that
goes
that was interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was...
The machine bit as well, where it shows the pencils go bit by bit all the way down. I was seeing in reflection of Fritz Lang's films, Metropolis, where he has thousands and thousands of people just lined up and the day-to-day drone of we've got to go down this route, we've got to go down this route. I was wondering, could that be reflecting to say everyone's just on the same path?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's on the same path.
Absolutely, I think that's what he's doing. We're all just part of this machine of life.
Yeah.
We all go through the same process. So what happens at the end? You either come out as a pencil or an eraser. What sort of person are you?
I love this film. You know what? We could watch it again and again, and we'll still come up with something different.
I tell you what I really liked in second viewing was, you know, the scene where he decides to go and pull his neighbour across the landing.
Yeah.
And he's like, he says, "I locked myself out of my apartment." It is just pure cheesy porno.
Yeah.
The whole introduction to that,
especially
is like really
at the time as well, in the late 70s, you had a massive influence of the porn industry as well.
there was a couple of bits at the beginning as well with his soundscape and that. I don't know if this is, you know, like there's always this sort of, a lot of the time in Lit, there's this underlying noise. You know, like atmospherics. Yeah, they're and stuff like that. Now, that noise is throughout this whole film, or this noise throughout the whole film, and I've kind of got in my head now a little bit that he uses this background tension noise when in dream state, and because this is in a sort of full dream state, it's constantly there. But thinking back to other films we've watched, when we've talked about the use of silence and not silence, I don't know if this is factual because I'd have to go back and watch it, but because the silence is usually quite sparing, are they the scenes that are reality, you know, whereas this one isn't? And there's a bit at the beginning where he jumps in, he falls into a puddle and there's no noise. Now, I immediately thought, well, that's cheap. You know, like a lot of these films at the time, at the time going back, because this is sort of like that 50s style, is you wouldn't necessarily put a sound overdub on that puddle, but with Lynch, you know it was meant to be done. And in a dream, there is these sort of noises, there is sometimes no noise, things like that.
I don't think
I was just going to say about the puddle, not just the noise, but the fact that the
the seeds, the sperms are going into this what looks like a puddle or hole, and he
it's a golden pool. Golden pool, exactly the same as Twin Peaks in
Right. Because I thought the puddle, because he gets covered in the mud, he just can't get it. He can't get away from this, whatever it is. I don't know. Stuff like that. I'm talking about someone stepping in a fucking puddle with such.
You know what? Now you've said it. Of all the times I've watched it, wow. I can see where you're coming from on there.
Lynch doesn't put sound in if you're not expected to be able to see it from where you're standing. And I think when you're observing from them, you're quite far away, because they're quite happy to have a scene.
Yeah.
And again, in Twin Peaks, I go back to that. That somebody's over there talking and doing stuff. You can't quite hear because the camera is too far away.
Club Straight Story as well, he did it in that, when people stood back.
There's that club scene, and I can't remember if it was in a film or Twin Peaks, where they go to, I think it might be Fire Walk With Me, actually. Yeah, with Fire Walk With Me.
Yeah, they do.
And
then
they've got that it's so loud, but it's actually like being in a club, but you can't really hear the dialogue. Stuff like that, it just brings you in.
Well, that's what I was going to say about the ambient sound you hear, the rushing noise. Now, if you're in a quiet room all on your own, it's not actually quiet, is it? Because you hear yourself. Yeah. You hear your inner,
breathing.
Possibly reinforcing the fact that if you cover your ears up, you'll hear a rushing noise, more or less. It's equivalent to that, or a seashell, maybe, I don't know. But it's just ambient noise. True silence doesn't happen. When you're watching something, you've got your own, you filter it out. Everybody filters out their own sounds, otherwise you go mental. But he doesn't do that, so he puts you in a position of an observer that has the ambient sound there around them when they're watching something or observing something.
Beautiful.
And he makes you feel tense as fuck.
Because he ramps it up, and you can definitely feel your heart at points because of the way he does with the music and sound. He's a master of it, an absolute master of it. And he did all himself as well. All the music
as
well.
That noise that
with Fats Walker and Peter Ives.
You go to 60s Doctor Who, I said before, you'll hear that whooshing noise when they're on planets and on space stations. That's exactly the same noise, and that's why, with it being black and white, it reminded me of that sort of thing. That space station Doctor Who quarry noise. But it was just so good.
I've written loads down, but one of the things what I wanted to bring up, because you raised it first, Twin Peaks, the famous episode of Episode 8, he's in the background. He's got a picture of the atomic mushroom cloud.
Yeah.
And his connection of that in the Twin Peaks, that's linked on the back of his office as well. It's all linked. Is this a post-apocalyptic? Is it supposed to be set before then? Or is it because of the things what was going on in his mind? Like I said, because it's still in a dream, what I think it is.
I think it's important that, Gordon Cole has a picture of the atomic bomb on his wall.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's definitely a link to it. And episode 8 is pretty much explains the nuclear bombers opening up of badness bringing into the world. And so, definitely something. I just don't know what.
Yeah.
Should we ask Dave Lynch? Should we go and ask Dave Lynch?
I'm sure he.
He wouldn't say anything, though.
Yeah, but he'll talk to anyone. He talks to that fucking asshole Russell Brown, doesn't he? So. Just saying.
What did you think of the use of the wall outside his window? All the way through it, you see this wall outside his window. He's constantly looking out, like if he's struggling to actually see something one day, even though it's a wall, so he knows it's a wall there. It's not going to change. And then all of a sudden, at one point, he hears people fighting, and he looks outside and see people are fighting in the street. It reminded me so much of the times when there's so much in his films where I need not explain, because that's everyday life. Mm. You know, someone walking past, someone talking, someone arguing. It might have no relevance to the film, but he still has it in the film because that's everyday life. That's the shit what happens.
I think the wall outside his window is meant to at least represent in some small part his feelings of trappedness.
Yeah, can't get away.
Or at least Henry's feeling of trappedness.
Yeah, can't get away.
And you know, maybe much of this is just a visualisation of the emotions that the characters are feeling. Who knows? But yeah, there's loads of stuff that, is not going to get answered. I'm not 100% convinced I know what the sperms are. Fear and regrets. perhaps, or ideas, or his essential part. I don't know what that is.
Well, the sperm he keeps boxed up only comes alive when the lustful feelings start to grow, and then it escapes once that sort of bits. Do you know what I mean? So
that was the last thing he was holding on to of his old life, right?
Yeah, or excitement, the last bit of excitement, or what he perceived to be excitement.
Happiness.
Yeah.
But then likewise, you've got the woman in the radiator squashing them. So maybe these sperms can be both good and bad. And right at the start, when they're dropping into that golden pool, just before we transfer into Henry's life, it's got so many questions still.
I suppose, because if you think about it, Hitler was a sperm and so was Gandhi. Good and bad, innit?
Well, that's all arguments won and lost simultaneously,
I see where he's coming
from. That's
going
to look good on YouTube. You've got Gandhi and Hitler next to each other. That's never happened before.
I was just thinking of the YouTube clip. That's all I was thinking about.
Wow. One thing you could take from the beginning bit, which I remember in college and learning, you know, you chat to your mates about it and stuff. But the beginning, when you see him laying there and you see what's going on in his mind, is that's his point where he's having sex. He's having sexual intercourse and his sperm is impregnating the woman. And that's why the levers are being pulled as well. Because at this point in his life, it's splitting in a road.
Yeah, that could be literal, that golden pool and the sperm's going into it. It might be literally that.
Yeah.
And that sets him on this journey that the switch guy, I don't know,
sets
what
him on
him.
A new.
What do you call somebody who changes the junction box, fella? What do you call
it? I was hoping you'd won. All I got in my head was junction box guy.
It's got. Nah, it's not.
That's
it's
just as good as anything.
Controller.
No, it's not the controller.
Oh, it's the fat controller.
Something else.
Junction man.
Did you notice Bob as well in the lobby of his hotel, of his place?
Yeah,
his apartment, the zigzag floor pattern.
Yeah, and the curtains as well. Like it was.
Yeah, and the curtains as well. Yeah, and also that's like it's like that when he's getting in the lift, waiting for the doors to close and stuff. It's all about and it's zigzag and it's the viewing box of him.
And also, I wanted to talk about the lift bit as well. At the beginning. He's going to his day-to-day drone of life and he walks into the lift and it's such a long time for the lift to close and start moving up, yeah? Mm. In the future part where he's busy, he's got his child to look after, he's got his wife at home, he's got a lot on his mind, he walks into the lift and the lift closes quickly. Mm. It's like he hasn't got time now. It's like he's thinking, I'm rushed. There's a lot I've got to do. So even the lift is closing faster to accommodate him.
I got some Charlie Chaplin vibes from Henry's walk.
Very much, very much. And you can see that from his silent film era, which probably he loves.
I mean, that might be why there was no sound on the puddle splash, because it was a silent era thing.
That bit of thing. Yeah, no, absolutely. Signal controller.
Yeah,
did you Google that?
No, it just came to my brain.
No, that's right. Sounds right to me. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I've got him written down as the line fella. Yeah. That's not really helpful, is it?
Crusty dude pulling levers, I got.
Yeah.
Did you also notice as well, coming from the Charlie Chaplin bit, is you've got one of the opening shots is you've got a mound of earth, so looks like some building had fell down, and then sort of a straight path, but he chooses to walk on the roof and go on the harder route, like he wants the harder time in his life.
It's not even vague, is it? I mean, it's non-literal, but
it's like metaphorical madness, this film. That should be its tagline.
I want to show him choosing the rougher path. Yeah. So literally, I'll make a path and a dodgy path and you'll choose the rougher path. Not even subtle.
I'm not saying, like I say, if I watch this without all the other stuff, you know, it maybe wouldn't be, I'm not going to say obvious because it's not obvious, but it wouldn't make anywhere near as much sense to me personally. You know, I'm not saying I'm right or wrong in what I think about it, but
you've got a lot more out of it from having watched the other stuff.
Oh, so much
Oh my God, yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's just amazing.
What do you think, John Cecil, the first time you watched it for my podcast, wasn't it, some time ago, and then you watched it recently? Has your theories changed, or do you feel more appreciation of it?
Well, the first time I watched it, I remember getting fascinated as to what the fuck have I watched, and I want to find out more about it.
And
I spent shit on and ended up on this fucking Lynch journey. But since then, watching it again, I kind of felt a lot more comfortable in watching it because I wasn't trying to understand as I was doing it. I was letting it wash over me a bit because it's a zero sum game to try and like fucking comprehend a lot of this. And a lot of the comprehension is subliminal as well, so you're not 100% sure what's going on, but it'll soak in there and eventually you'll figure it out. Or at least you'll figure it out to a satisfactory degree. But I think the second time viewing is a lot... I got a lot more from it because I felt as though I understood it a bit more. However, I still don't understand. I think I'm about half of it I understand. But that's fine.
It's fine.
That kind of, that's the whole... point
I think
of the
that's
process.
What he wants.
And more of this time, I was accepting of that. I was accepting the fact that I'm just not going to understand some of it. It doesn't matter.
And it's the way, matter, it's the way thing. It's the way it makes you feel. It's the way it taps into your conscience and stuff like that. And if you can do that, that's your personal perspective or your feelings towards that piece of art.
That's
why it's fucking brilliant. It's left open to interpretation by the viewer.
I'm not 100% certain I understand what the bleeding chicken thing was all about.
No. I've got a theory on it. It's quite grotesque.
Abortion or childbirth.
I was thinking that, but I wasn't.
And that's why mum was getting affected
by it.
It was weird that Bill said, Henry, you do the carving. I think that has something to do with the fact that...
preamble to killing
He's taking on adulthood and he's taking on responsibility, the family man thing. Yeah. And he's doing a fucking shit job of cutting this chicken and it's bleeding everywhere.
Yeah.
It's all in here for him, isn't it?
Oh, I like that.
This is what I mean. I'm getting stuff as we're talking about it. I mean, it's not something I wrote down. I wrote down, what's all this about the bleeding chicken? Is it sexual? Is it something else? What's going on?
I like that. Handing over the control, he fucks it up. And he just constantly feels like he's fucking up. And the fact that the baby gets diseased and all that, and he's having to just stick with it and make it better. And is it because he's feeling diseased. The worse his lustful feelings are getting, or the more he's feeling trapped, the worse the baby's getting as well. To the point where he kills the baby, and then kills himself, whatever, passes on to the next realm or whatever. Realm, I've said realm twice. Do you know what I mean?
Space.
But you know, so it's getting worse with him. That's why I think it's representative of him.
Oh yeah, I think they're tied in together. I think certainly the baby gets worse as he does things like he neglects it a little bit because he's there and he's looking at it and he's paying significant attention to it and he's caring about it. But as soon as he decides to do his one bit of selfish personal happiness thing,
with the
woman across the thing, it just starts to go wrong.
It's also his guilt, it's
a manifestation of his guilt, isn't it?
He's also laid there in the same position as well. You know, like he's laid there in the same position as the baby. And the scene with his wife, flapping about and all that, and he's like, move over. And again, everything's getting on top of him. It's that claustrophobic, no way out feeling.
She's grinding her teeth.
Yeah, and all that.
Yeah, she's acting like the baby. I found that was a dream within a dream because he was dreaming like,
the old dream of the dream.
I think this was the baby as well.
It was a very good demonstration of post-birth... What is it?
Post-traumatic stress.
No, not post-traumatic. It's postnatal depression.
Postnatal depression,
because she's literally driven up the wall by it. She has to leave and stuff. And so I think that the feeling you get from her, the feeling of trap that she has... The feeling of, I've got to live with this guy now and he's my husband.
Yeah.
I've got a baby that's, I'm not 100% sure is real or it is well. And I'm trying to do it and I can't and it's just screaming, 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 screaming. The madness of that period of the film is really well done.
It is. And you also got a feel for her and you also feel for Henry because he's got no one else. Have you seen it? She's got the fact that she can fall back to her mother and father. And when she goes out, I'm going off to mum and father. And he sort of looks at her and then looks at the baby and then again outside of the window. of his feeling of, I ain't got no one. This is it. This is my bit. Mm. And then it is to me like Alice in Wonderland going down the rabbit hole, and it goes further and further down into despair to the point of, like I said, either he kills himself or something happens. And he lives up these perversions as he's journeying there. But then in the end, it's sort of a happy ending, because he gets to, you know, grab the woman, his angelic figure, this sweet, innocent person of which he keeps thinking of. So that's where it's me thinking, has he passed on? Has he died?
Who looks like she has cheeks made of cheese? Or like I the think, moon?
But she still looks lovely.
Yeah, no, she does, yeah.
She still does look lovely. But I think it's like the plump-cheeked idea of 50s idea of beauty and things like that. That is another simplification of her cheeks are especially plump and lovely. But beyond the pale, it's imagination time, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what I just sort of thought. You know, the moment at the very start where you see Henry's face transparent above the planet thing.
Yeah.
What's the expression on his face when he's looking confused?
And I think he's just looking.
But that's... I reckon that's everything after that is a fantasy of what happens to his wife. But he can't keep out with the reality of the situation from his fantasy.
Yeah.
And so he wants to just end it all and walk into the light. But this is not what actually happens. I think what actually happens is he wakes up. But who knows?
Who knows? Who knows, yeah.
You never know. But I also see the ending to me is very much the end of Mulholland Drive. Where she commits suicide, isn't it? This is, you know what I mean, where we see the actual, if you put it in a linear point, she kills herself. And that, to me, felt like this. This felt like that was the ending. Like, this only release was to bridge the next part of his life, which is death.
I would say that Mulholland Drive is explicit in saying that we're now out of the dream and we're in the real world.
Yeah. Yes, it is, yeah.
We don't get that part in it. No. In Eraserhead, it's a continuation of the whole fantasy,
because
that's why we do get the signal guy, the signal controller, at the end, again, to send it back. So I think he's fantasizing killing himself, and knows. But hey, well, it's a film a film that came out 44 years ago,
and we're still talking about it,
and
now.
and people will still be talking about it in 50 years from now. Cause it's amazing.
I hope so.
After watching it, and I know we said it last time, watch your top lot, of Lynch. We've done it now. We've done all his films. I'd have to say Eraserhead's gone back onto me number one.
It's my number one.
I just think it's beautiful. It's Eraserhead to me, Mulholland Drive, Blue it's Velvet, difficult. And then a lot of the others seem to all jumble in, and it's very hard to put. I would say, and this is no because it's a badder film, but badder is that's a cliff word.
Worse.
It's Inland Empire is still a struggle to me, but I can see connections with Inland Empire to Eraserhead a lot, and maybe I'll watch that and understand it a bit more. Maybe if you watched it, Bob, now you'll be like understanding where he's trying to go with it.
I think Eraserhead doesn't mess about with time like Inland Empire does. Inland Empire is messing about with fucking time a lot. That's why it's a bit more confusing.
But yeah, this is my number one.
Oh, is it your number one?
I don't know with the rest. It's weird. I've really enjoyed. June was a big surprise to me. But yeah, that was awesome. The Elephant Man was awesome. The Straight Saw is awesome for a Sunday afternoon. I love the sort
Straight Saw. Yeah, beautiful stuff.
It was great, and I loved Mulholland Drive. Yeah, because that was the most maybe Twin Peaksy. They're just all being apart from Inland Empire. I didn't really enjoy Inland Empire so much, but all the others, they've all just been class in their own way. But this was just. I was just like, here he is, fucking hell, here's Lynch before he got tarnished and fucked over and all that. This is just a man doing some art that's representative of him personally. And then it's lovely to see all the stuff that he's kept in over the years. You know, throughout the stuff that he's done himself, you know, like not the Elephant, not the Straight Story, not June, you know, Mulholland Drive, Twin Peaks, all that kind of stuff in there. The continuation of stuff that he had from this brilliant film. It's amazing.
I would not put this as my number one, but it has to be in the top three by dint of the fact that it's so important in terms of everything.
Yeah.
I think my number one is still Mulholland Drive.
And yeah, Mulholland Drive. Firewalk awesome.
With Me, because of the sheer emotional impact of watching Firewalk With Me.
Yeah.
In the context of watching Twin Peaks and all that, so just like
Firewalk With Me, incredible. I can't classify it as a standalone because I always have the Twin Peaks background with it.
Yeah.
To me, that encompasses part of the Twin Peaks world. So I can't rank that really. To me, that's always in there. To me, that's always up very, very high. But I rank that also as a TV add-on. It's a film which was added on, and therefore it's an expanding that world.
Either
for me.
Way, it's still Mulholland Drive up there for me. Mulholland Drive, Firewalk With Me, Eraserhead, and then after that you've got your Blue Velvets and all Blue that Velvet sort of stuff. That's kind of a little bit merged together.
Wild at Heart was fucking cool.
Oh god,
cool.
Yeah, that was great as well.
Probably when you're ranking all of these, they're all top rank for a different category.
Yeah.
If you've got a pure lynching experience, number one is Eraserhead. If you've got the absolute fucked up crazy characters, then Wild at Heart is pretty much up there. And
Mulholland Drive as well. I think there's some brilliant fucked up crazy characters in that. Because I have been I'm a big fan of the fucked up crazy characters. Because I love Twin Peaks so much. And that was my real introduction.
I love his humour.
Yeah,
and even though people categorise Eraserhead as an art film, and some arseholes categorise it as, you know, pretentious and that, there's humour in it. All the way through it. You can giggle at parts, and it's funny at parts.
Do you know what is pretentious?
Yeah.
Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but for me Immortals have...
I never thought Cobra Kai would come out of John's lips.
Well, do you know what though, John? For me Immortals, with a slightly lower intelligence than the fans of Cobra Kai, you won't understand the full concept, so therefore it appears pretentious, whereas he's just not working on that level.
That sounds like a pretentious reply. I'll take it. It's good.
So all in all, we've done the whole catalogue of David Lynch's films now.
The long ones. Not the shorts.
That might be a good one.
Yeah.
But I think our next journey would be start of Twin Peaks. I've really enjoyed this. It's been a long journey.
It's been about a year, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, I think it's about a year since John and I did Eraserhead, and then after that we did Man Bites Dog as the three. Of us.
Yeah. Man Bites Dog. Fucking.
And you can see connections with Man Bites Dog. And then we went.
Oh, you can see. And you can see full, especially Man Bites Dog. I was going to mention earlier, Eraserhead stuff with Man Bites Dog. You can get.
Yeah.
And I just in addition to all the stuff we've already said about it, the. Lynch's director, the way he makes a scene, the way he puts the camera and the things it does, it's not flashy, but it is absolutely perfect. Every scene is like, you feel like so comfortable watching it.
Yeah.
There's nothing jarring. Even the jarring bits are meant to be non-jarring.
It's just, yeah. Fucking, what an awesome end to an awesome journey.
It's been a brilliant journey.
The whole point of this journey was in order to get to the end point where Bob experienced his Eraserhead.
And we did it.
It was the whole point of this whole journey.
And if you would have started with Eraserhead, you might have just gone, fuck that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you did say a couple of fuck that's when you watched Blue Velvet the first time.
That's happened quite a lot with the Lynch films, is like watching them for once and going, oh, what the fuck have I got myself into? And then watching it again, then I've gone, and I think it's what John was saying before about it, not letting it wash over you, rather than going, what's it all about? I don't know what it's about. You know, freaking out about it. Rather than just going, all right, just fucking watch it. And then you get stuck. When you relax, you watch it, you get what you can from it. And that's the point of it.
I think that's the point of any art.
And it's chatting together is
how we get more out of it.
Exactly. There's that as well. And it's great to be able to chat about it and not be right or wrong. You know, we did have shit cameras in Inland Empire. That's a fact. The rest of it is up for debate.
Cobra Kai's pretentious,
pretentious. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think John, I listened back to some of our podcasts, what we've done on Lynch more, because obviously it's the last one. So I was listening back over the last few weeks and I was thinking how far we've come. And at first we tried to dissect everything, and it's really interesting if you go back and listen. And then after a while, very similar to what you and Bob, John just said, is you allow the film to show you what it needs to show, and you stand back a little bit rather than just interrogating it like a crime novel. And you know, you start pulling together what Lynch does. You know, he shows you at the beginning what he's expecting to show. And when I got to Eraserhead again, when I started watching it, it was, and it's a great line what John says, I can't remember which podcast it was, it goes, Lynch is like having a full-on three-course meal.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a good feast. And that's what you do. You enjoy it, you take it in. Don't just stand back and scrutinize it like it's some university degree you're trying to pass. Enjoy the film, and that's in all his films. Just stand back and just enjoy it.
You can't interpret things straight off. You've got to let it stew in your head for a bit.
Yeah.
And then you've got to echo it about a bit, and then you've got to talk to people about it. And even in this conversation, we've done Eraserhead before, so we've had these conversations, but I've got like at least two or three new ideas from this.
I loved hearing from you, Bob, that you enjoyed it. This is the one I was worried of you watching, because I was thinking, oh God.
I was secretly convinced that Bob would love this because of the characters and the fact that
the more he got out of Bob saying that he enjoyed the characters and he enjoyed the wackiness and the humour, and this has everything. This has all of it in.
It sure does, and I think the thing that struck me maybe the last couple of episodes is the fact of that he's looking at the human condition of the mind, like how bonkers people are, and being quite honest about it on screen as well. And I think a lot of that's very personal to him and his journey. And I think that's great for many artists. You've got to put yourself into it, and this. He fucking puts himself into it, you know. His darkest, deepest thoughts are there on screen.
Blood and sweat in this, you can see.
And that's fascinating, and that's why his stuff's so awesome. And it's very easy to be. I mean, I was a very close-minded person. I would have cut this Lynch stuff down and gone, what a lot of fucking shit. But I'm glad I'm not like that, and I'm glad I've got more open-minded as the journey's continued to sort of fucking take it in and appreciate it.
But you're still a fan of Cobra Kai, so your opinion's worthless.
Yeah, but I span all the genres, John.
I think you're right, though, Bob. It's just like, I think the difference with Eraserhead is that it is his most spiritual. So I reckon Eraserhead is a literal, he's taken from his own life, his own experiences. Yeah. And I think with the other films, he's taken elements of it, but a lot of it is to do with his experiences over Dune and Elephant Man. It's like, that was what he was doing in Eraserhead was before it even Hollywooded.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, everything after, as soon as he Hollywooded, is different. I think this is the root of it all. This is where he's most. You see most of Lynch in this one.
But I think that's what I was saying when I sort of said before about it being an interpersonal. Like for him, his interpersonal thoughts and feelings and things like that. The Hollywood stuff is, because it's a fucking massive bee in his bonnet. But this is more innocent. Innocent, I think, is the word.
I like that.
You know, this
is his full on creative spirit, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's got no one to answer to. I like that idea.
It's just fucking great.
Okay, our last rounds of what you think of, well, the whole of the Lynch Mob, because that's it now. We can call ourselves Twin Peaks Mob or something else.
Twin My Peaks.
My Twin Peaks. Or something.
Nicky Grinders.
It's been cool, man. I always like to feel like there was a point in doing something and feel like I've come out the other side with, you know, a better. And I certainly have, watching all this stuff, you know. And it's cool as well, because when you do have these maybe slightly pretentious film kind of people, I can join in now and be one a bit, you know what I mean? But that's kind of the beauty of it, is if you can open your mind and watch a Lynch film, be it, no matter how intelligent, whatever you are, and you just realise you can get your own thing from it, it kind of don't matter. That's the awesome thing. And I think that's just only dawned on me, like I said, recently, the last sort of maybe couple of films we watched. And that's brilliant, because then I can go back and watch them and just go, do you know what? Stick it on, open your mind and fucking take what you want from it, you know, or just take it however you want.
But it's
been awesome, man. I mean, it's been cool as well. Like, it's been a massive fucking journey for me watching all this stuff. and you know, starting with Twin Peaks and all that, and then doing all these films, and then talking about you, it's pretty brilliant. But to end with this, fucking awesome, man.
I've really, really enjoyed it. I know, like I said, we go right back to the beginning. We all watched Man Bites Dog, and I think we all just clicked then. And,
Man Bites Dog was fucking ace.
I think we all just went, "Wow, we've got something here." And then John suggested, "Let's do this Lynch Mob thing and put it all together on the back of watching Eraserhead." And then I think we come closer as a team, and also creativity as well. It's really sparked my creative.
I was going to say,
I've got built a lot out of it, which for me is felt really good.
The videos you've done, man, are being they were always good, but they're absolutely just amazing.
Yeah, I think it's
amazing,
just
work
building on ourselves and loving to have someone to chat to on a film where, to be honest, when I brought it up to growing up, people hated Doctor Who, so he was always singled out. So then, I'm a big lad, so you watch all the lad stuff and the boxing, but then I turn around and say, "Hey, do you fancy watching this, Man Bite Dog?" And people are like, "Well, it's fucking foreign, you dickhead." Or, "What about this, Eraserhead?"
So
what,
Salford,
what the fuck,
so Salford, that line.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
It's fucking foreign, you dickhead.
but that's what you get. And then you actually start thinking to yourself, am I at the point where I can't watch this because I won't understand it? You know what I mean? People put themselves down like that and go,
"That's where I'm coming from." Yeah,
that is too arty for me. But then when you watch it and start grasping bits and then understanding by listening to the guy, David, he wants anyone to watch it.
Accessibility,
and get your own interpretation. And that's what I loved about this journey of Lynch Mob, is experiencing things and talk about things where in the past you might have thought some upper class toff from Oxford might have been going on about it, but I bet we get the better things.
Do you know what I love at the moment is when, you know, because I maybe thought Quentin Tarantino, like before this was like this awesome film dude, and now I think he's distinctly average to say the least. But I love it when people who think they know about movies and films and that, then Tarantino, they holding him up there, and that's where I used to be, maybe a little bit. I've never been a massive fan, but like, you know, like you think, "Oh, that's how a film should be done and all that." Fuck off. You know, now I can look down and put, well, Quentin Tarantino, I like David Lynch, and I'll tell you about David Lynch. So I can
tell you about David Lynch for like 4 hours.
Yeah. So I could do the potentially.
You can host a dinner party on Lynch
down,
now.
I can look down on these Tarantino people and all that now. If I want to, I'm not saying I will, but I can.
I just had a vision of you with a cigarette case and a smoking jacket. Going, "Let me tell you about David Lynch."
Tarantino. You know. But that is fucking cool, man.
Well, for me, I think the root of all of this started from me doing the podcast with Sookie. And there's a couple of films that popped up in there that sort of awoken the idea of what film could be and how exciting it could be. And that was a couple of films, being John Malkovich, and I think Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah, it's tremendous.
Just like, and things like that, and seeing, oh, you can put clues in there, you can really expand things. And that opened me up. That's why I was so keen to do Man Bites Dog, because I had seen it when I was a lot young.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to be knowledgeable about movies, but I'm not.
Yeah.
Well, this gave me an opportunity to, A, go on a journey, because this is literally, it's been a year of a journey of these films.
Yeah.
It's completely opened my mind to what, but it also, likewise, has ruined shit for me. Because I struggle to watch a film that people say is great.
Yes,
that is just average.
And it's just the really, film, isn't it?
And it's like, yeah, it's like, where's the bits that like I don't understand because they're so weird? That's not happening.
Why is it all on a plate? Why is it all this garishly shiny and cartoony?
Well, then you can go over the top and look too much into it, and then people are like, "No, it's not about like." Like, oh, right, okay.
It's all about the plate. It's all there.
It means that films, I haven't to curate the films I watch, and I think that I've really enjoyed the journey from start to finish, and I knew as soon as we did Eraserhead that Lynch was the one I wanted to go through with a fucking fine tooth comb. Twin Peaks basically is the root of all of this. And we've done it, and I think, likewise, having two other northern knobheads to join me with it, makes us feel like as a trio of northern knobheads talking about David Lynch, we've gone through a proper journey. I've learnt so much, and I can appreciate so much more the things that we see. I can value it in an artistic way, which I never thought I'd be able to do with a film. So yeah, that's where we're at.
Thank you. I think that's brilliant. That's a nice roundup for the whole lot. And this will be in a podcast on YouTube. It'll be on a YouTube channel. And going forward, we're going to do Twin Peaks. We've got to figure it out yet. Hopefully it'll be like a
No promises yet.
We've got to figure it out yet, but that's the future. Right, I'm going to finish off and say thank you very much to Bob. Thank you very much for George for joining us on this journey. And join us again in the future. We'll be putting something together. Bye-bye.
Lynched.
In heaven, everything is fine. In heaven, everything is fine. In heaven, everything is fine. You got your good things, and I've got mine. In heaven, everything is fine. In heaven, everything is fine. In heaven, everything is fine. You got thank you.